Welcome to episode number 17 of Tech Talk today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. As always, we enjoy tweets to @WCCRTechTalk during the show with your comments and ideas. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's get Triple T started with this week's Tech Roundup. I'm sure we've all heard about the Apple Pay. It's been released, and there's some, businesses have actually banned it. Well, there's some competitors to it, and looks one of the biggest ones, MCX, which hasn't even started yet. Like, you could sign up for it, and they were getting ready to release it, has already been hacked. According to an email sent out to the people who have signed up for or downloaded the Current C app, a spokeswoman confirmed that the email is real. MCX, which is a consortium of dozens of retailers, including Walmart, Best Buy, Target, Kohl's, and CVS, say that no other information has been taken out, that the investigation is continuing. The unauthorized third parties were able to access email addresses of people who were part of the app's private beta testing program, as well as email addresses of people who simply signed up to access the app when it launches publicly. It has already been a bad week for MCX, after member companies CVS and Rite Aid banned Apple's new Apple Pay payment technology from their stores, infuriating a vocal group of iPhone lovers. Some of these people have taken to the review section of the app stores to voice their opinion, where the app has received an average of 1 out of 5 stars. So, by banning Apple Pay, which is built into the new line of iPhones, merchants are actually choosing to ban a more secure payment method because it requires your fingerprint to actually do the transaction. So, I thought that was pretty interesting. They, it's not going to grow if you have faith in it, but, you know, with these hacks like this, you can't really have faith in it.
Well, first of all, for our listeners, don't turn your dial. Don't tune. Try to tune your radio. Kurt has a cold, there's nothing wrong with your sound system. Okay, it's just Kurt.
My beautiful voice. That's right. Is, so compromised.
He's trying to have a deep voice like me, I think. And
it's happening.
Yeah, that's right. Uh-huh. Okay. Apple Pay, though. I mean, MCX is. Well, I mean, they're done. I mean, you can't really have this type of issue right out of the gate and, you know, kind of keep up with what's going to happen. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We said that, you know, things coming out like Apple Pay, you know, the credit card companies have done it for so many years. And how often do they get hacked and how often do they have problems? And now we have Apple and companies like MCX coming out and trying to do mobile payment options through, you know, near field sensors and things like that. And you know, are they going to get hacked? Yeah, they are. I mean, it's just going to happen. There's no doubts about it. So, it's come to say that, you know, we're talking today about MCX getting hacked. We're going to talk about Apple Pay getting hacked. It's not a thing of if, it's a thing of when.
When.
And that's just the way it is. And, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, you know, how secure Apple keeps their product. It's just going to happen. It's just the type of thing that happens. You know, and along the same lines of that, Network World article about Drupal. If your organization uses Drupal, you might have a serious problem on your hands because on October 15th, Drupal urged users to apply an update to fix a SQL injection flaw. So SQL injection is essentially when you can go on a website and you can type in a SQL command. SQL is a programming language, essentially. It's a query language you can use to query a database. And you can type in a command, and the website will execute that command because the proper security implementations aren't in place to stop it from doing that. And so that's what happened on Drupal. Now, Drupal is a content management system that's used in a whole lot of websites. Drupal said that unless the patch was installed within 7 hours, and this was on October 15th, they say it's best to assume that the whole website is completely compromised.
Wow.
SQL injection vulnerability exists in API used by Drupal, which is supposed to prevent SQL injection. but it was rediscovered by a German security firm in September after Drupal was hired them to check for vulnerabilities. So Drupal uses an API, okay, and that's the way they handle those prepared statements in the Drupal 7 core. And all the versions of Drupal 7X, 7.x, so everything from 7.0 all the way up, everything before 7.32, they're all vulnerable. And if it's exploited, a remote unauthenticated attacker can inject SQL queries, elevate privilege, or otherwise completely control the Drupal installation. So this is really bad. I mean, somebody could, you know, completely deface a website, but more importantly, someone could attack, you know, the database behind Drupal and get a lot of sensitive information. So kind of a big deal there.
Well, have we ever discussed exactly what a SQL injection attack, like how that entails, like what a good equivalent would be? But
probably not. I don't think we've talked about SQL. You know, and as we mentioned earlier, SQL injection is, it's the ability to run a query on a database through a web page. So, you know,
I guess I'd see it like, I mean, there's definitely better analogies, but the one I see is I'm going to send Justin a mail for the snail mail, I guess we'll call it, and I don't seal the envelope. Somebody else could take that, insert a letter inside of it, and then complete it and then send it. Well, I guess it's not really that accurate, but basically you're using means that do interact directly with the database and inserting your own stuff in it.
And your envelope ideology, your envelope example is perfect, because that's what we're talking about with all these exploits. So we're talking about if you're thinking along the lines of snail mail, where you seal something up in an envelope and you expect that to stay sealed until it gets to the other side, and only somebody else on the other side is able to see it. That's the same thing that we want with our network traffic.
Right.
We want it to be sealed until it gets to the other side. And that's what we're talking about with, you know, attacks of certain types, you know, and we talk about those types of exploits all the time. About them in an article just a while ago. I mean, people stealing data, mm-hmm. they're stealing data from that sealed envelope that's supposed to be sealed, but something's happened to where the stickies come off of it and it's not quite so sealed anymore.
Sticky like that.
So, and you know, with Drupal, what we're looking at here is we're looking at the ability for an attacker to essentially take over the entire system. Once you can run a SQL injection, then you can make yourself an administrator inside the system. And once you make yourself an administrator inside the system, then you can do whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
That's pretty big stuff. So if you have a business out there that's running Drupal, check your versioning. If it's between 7.0 and 7.32, then you need to seriously take a look at your implementation there and make sure there's not any problems.
Absolutely. Let's see, Windows 10. If anybody's used, well, let's go back to Linux. If anybody's ever used Linux, any of the command line stuff, more than likely you've come across a command called apt-get or apt-get. Well, now Windows 10, apparently they're going with they're going to be coming out with a Linux-style package management like this. Now, what apt-get, I don't really know how to pronounce it, to be honest. What that's used for is the allows you to check what updates or upgrades might be available to, you know, any and all of the software on a computer. And it could not just, you know, plain software. It could even pertain to the core kernels and stuff, you know. So it's really interesting for Windows to go this route and to include, they're calling it OneGet. It was first detailed back in April, but at that time it was an optional feature for Windows 8.1 and could be installed on Windows Management Framework 5.0 preview. This is the first I've heard of this. The important bit of the news here is that OneGet will come with all Windows 10 installs, meaning that developers can now make use of the functionality, as they know every new install will have this feature. Microsoft describes OneGet as a new way to discover and install software packages from around the web. With OneGet, you can manage a list of software repositories in which packages can be searched, acquired, and installed, search and filter your repositories to find the packages you need, and seamlessly install and install packages from one or more repositories with a single PowerShell command. Honestly, that's kind of cool for developers and for people as IT administrators.
Definitely. I mean, this is very Linux-ish. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, this is exactly what you do inside of a Unix system. Apt-get is, you know, allows you to grab a package to, you know, untar that package, or to, you know, untar you. The package is compressed, so tar
extract.
Is tar. Yeah, exactly. So tar just allows, when you untar it, you're extracting it. Yeah, exactly. So. You know, this is really kind of cool. You know, Microsoft, with the implementation of PowerShell, has given the administrator, it's essentially a replacement for DOS, the DOS command. So, you know, if we move way back, if we go, you know, 20, 25, 30 years ago in computing, there was not a whole lot of graphical user interface that was used. Today, we point and click at everything. So, you know,
I don't,
no, well, you don't, but
kidding.
Most people do.
I'm just kidding.
You keyboarded everything.
I do keyboard everything.
Okay. All right. but essentially you're still telling the graphical user interface what to do.
Yeah.
And you know, for a while, Windows kind of went away from that. And now they're coming back to the point where most every command that you run on a Windows server or a Windows computer, essentially when you click something, you're running a PowerShell command in the background.
It's translating it, basically.
Exactly. So this is pretty neat. It's going to give administrators and developers, too, the ability to do some pretty cool stuff with their code and with automating file management and automating updates and things like that.
I actually saw a quote that said, Windows is just DOS dressed up like a lady.
Well, yeah. I mean, essentially, that's what it is. I mean, it's putting a pretty face on a command line.
Right.
Exactly.
It wasn't a direct quote, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's close enough, and that's right, exactly right. What it is. Network World article about hacking and Pirate Bay co-founder Gottfried Swarholm Warg.
Nice.
There we go. Thank you. He was found guilty of hacking and serious vandalism in the court of Frederiksberg in Denmark on Thursday. Now, Warg was found guilty for hacking the mainframe of IT service provider CSC in Denmark. A 21-year-old Danish man was also found guilty as he acted as Warg's accomplice, according to the ruling. To protect the man's privacy, Judge Kerry Sorensen, who presided over the case, ordered news outlets not to publish his name. The Warg sentence will be announced on Friday at 1 p.m. local time there in Denmark. And that's what Sorensen, the judge, said. She declined to discuss further details of the case over the phone. The prosecutor in the case is requesting a prison sentence of 5 years. As part of the sentencing hearing, prosecutor emphasized that since this is the second time that Warg has been sentenced for illegally accessing governmental data, the sentence should be somewhat longer than is typically the case in Denmark. Now, Judge Sorensen found that Warg accessed hundreds of thousands of Danish social security numbers, criminal records, and extradition agreements on CSC's mainframe, which contained sensitive and confidential information belonging to private and public institutions. Now, the Pirate Bay co-founder, Warg, has been holed up in a Danish cell since November of last year when he was extradited from Sweden, where he was serving a one-year sentence for hacking the mainframe of IT consulting firm Logica, which provided tax services to the Swedish government. His Danish detainment was prolonged many times pending the suit. So the Pirate Bay, just in case folks don't know, that's a place where you can download all kinds of content that typically is not legal, and it's a large P2P peer-to-peer sharing site, and so he's the co-founder of that, and you know, that's kind of fishy in itself, and then not on top of that he's hacked some pretty big places.
Fantastic. Wow. Well, yeah, maybe he'll learn his lesson.
Probably not.
Let's see here. I saw this one on the Register, so I don't know how good this one is, but I read it through. Apple iTunes music sales plummet. The Elevation and Vertigo may be songs that hit the high notes for Apple boss Tim Cook's chums U2, but the same can't be said for sales of iTunes music right now, which have reportedly nosedived since the start of 2013. And the part I didn't like is they didn't really have good numbers. I didn't really see any big numbers. So According to Wall Street Journal, iTunes revenue witnessed a rapid decline of around 13% to 14% over the course of the past 10 months. The newspaper cited sources familiar with the matter. Here in the UK, digital recording revenue first overtook physical in 2012. However, CD sales fell only 6.4% last year. By this time, Apple is apparently taking a knock from the rise of cheap music, such as free vids and streaming services, as well as low-cost subscription plans. Apple splashed out $3 billion in May this year when it bought Beats Electronics from Dr. Dre.
That's billion with a B.
B. Billion. The takeover was seen as significant, not just for acquiring the company's headphone biz, but also for scooping up its Beats Music streaming service, an area where Cupertino has so far failed to gain a foothold. Personally, obviously things like Pandora and, Spotify is a big one. Spotify,
yeah.
Pandora. We even featured Spotify one time.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have actually used Xbox Music Pass. That's another one. What else is there? I've noticed a lot of kids do. I do say kids. They will stream music on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess it's really starting to take a hit, you know. People that pay for music versus, you know, stream it, or maybe a one-time pay. So that's iTunes business model is obviously you pay by the song, not pay mm-hmm. for like a subscription or such. So
well, we're starting to move. Well, we've been moving for a long time, but we're starting to move even more into a subscription based world. We've been moving that way for a long time, and everything you see now pretty much has a subscription applied to it. And we talked. You were on vacation. I talked for an hour by myself.
I'm sorry.
I know. Last on episode 16, I talked about how CBS was coming out with their subscription services for paid programming. We're starting to see more and more of this. And so you subscribe to Spotify to get ad-free music streaming, right. You know, you subscribe to Pandora to get music streaming.
If you told me 10 years ago that Office would have had a subscription, an online subscription, I would never have believed you. And Office 365, you know, there's a subscription to that.
Well, I mean, we used to not have the infrastructure to do it.
That's true.
It's the logical progression. I mean, we went from you know, the vinyl record to the 8-track to the cassette tape, to the CD, and we turned music into digital artwork, and then we were able to use the internet to propagate that across the web. And once we did that, then it just makes sense to move into a subscription-based service.
So the media for music is taking up less and less and less space to where it's not even taking up space on your computer anymore.
That's exactly right. And, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, we've got mobile devices out there now that don't have a whole lot of free space. I mean, what would you rather have on your phone? Would you rather have music, or would you rather have pictures of your wife or your family? I would rather have number two. So that's if you look at my phone, that's where most of my storage is in pictures from my little boys and my wife. And so I'd rather stream my music than to have to waste all that storage space.
Yep.
Good point.
I agree.
Network World article about Microsoft layoffs. Microsoft has handed out pink slips in the third round of job cuts that, quote-unquote, almost concludes its plan to eliminate 18,000 positions.
Ooh.
That's 18,000.
Wow.
The company announced in July that it would let go about 14% of its workforce. That's a huge number. The largest set of job cuts in its history. But instead of axing them with one swing, Microsoft said it would carry out the job cuts over the course of fiscal year, which ends in June of next year. And we talked about this when it occurred on Tech Talk Today. Some critics termed this approach unwise, saying it would prolong uncertainty among employees, drag down staff morale, and reignite concern among enterprise customers. And give talking points to rivals and generate bad press for the company multiple times. It's not clear whether Microsoft took any of that advice into account, but clearly at some point it recently decided to get the layoffs over with sooner rather than later. Here's a quote by Microsoft spokeswoman. She said, Microsoft has taken another step that will complete almost all the 18,000 reductions announced in July. The reductions happening today are spread across many different business units and many different countries. Now, the first wave of layoffs, Microsoft dismissed about 13,000. They cut another 2,100 or so in September in the latest round. This latest round is likely to involve about 2,900. So about 12,500 of the jobs were eliminated as part of the absorption of Nokia devices and service, which Microsoft paid a little over $7 billion in that deal that closed in April. So, you know, our regrets to the folks who got their pink slips, and unfortunately that's business.
Yeah, it is how it goes. We've got a lot of Microsoft news today. Let's see here. Microsoft sales. Let's see. I was on the verge. Microsoft Q1 2015. The Surface is growing strongly, and Lumia sales are up. Microsoft has published its quarter one fiscal 2015 earnings. Company's made $4.5 billion in net income on $23.20 billion in revenue. Revenue has increased compared to $18.53 billion from the same period last year. But net income has decreased 14% compared to last year's $5.24 billion. Microsoft drop in profits largely related to $1.14 billion of integration and restructuring expenses following Nokia phone business acquisition. I was going to hit a few of their big hardware pieces. Surface Pro 3 launch in June. They got to see a full quarter, and it looks like it's up a massive 127%. Which is interesting because, you know, when you've only sold like 10 tablets, 127 isn't that big. Nah, I should say that. Elsewhere in hardware, Microsoft sold 2.4 million Xboxes this quarter, but it hasn't revealed the split between Xbox One and Xbox 360. Microsoft Xbox One has fallen behind Sony's PlayStation 4 for the last 9 months in a row now. They actually aren't doing so hot compared to PlayStation 4. So... OEM revenue, this would be the original equipment manufacturer revenue for Windows, has decreased by just 2% this quarter, showing that sales of traditional PCs and laptops are close to settling down after years of solid decline. People point this to people purchasing like iPads and things like that, other tablets, and you know, maybe not even going with a device, just you know, doing all the computing on their phone. I actually have some relatives that only surf the net on their phone. They like don't even use their computer anymore. So, businesses continue to refresh their PC hardware as Windows XP is no longer supported and Windows 7 moves in as a replacement, and 8 adoption is not particularly strong. It's like almost non-existent. Now Microsoft is focused on Windows 10, aimed directly at desktop PC users and businesses. So that's hopefully that'll be good for them. Everyone should check out the technical preview. Well, not everyone. If you're pretty comfortable with installing new operating systems and stuff, then you should probably check it out. It's kind of cool, I guess. Microsoft mobile efforts might be increasingly moving across the platform, but the company still sells Windows Phone licenses and has been focusing on the low end to push for growth recently. The Lumia 930, 630, and 530 were all launched and made available during the recent quarter, and Microsoft has been increasingly signing new hardware partners in 2014. So they sold 9.3 million Lumia phones in the most recent quarter, 5.6% increase from 8.8 million handset sales, same period last year. So they're doing pretty good. I thought it was interesting. They, you know, they seem to be doing well overall, I guess.
Well, I mean, the first paragraph that you read there was, you know, that you gave out was essentially telling us why that Microsoft's having to do some of these layoffs. I mean, you're talking about revenue increasing, but the net income decreased. You know, and they had a drop in profits, which they say is largely related to the integration and restructuring expenses from Nokia. But still, that's the reason they had to get rid of so many of those employees, because a lot of them were Nokia employees. So, I mean, once you begin to acquire businesses, you start to have some bloat, and you kind of have to cut off the bloat.
Shave it off.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's what they're doing. I mean, they're restructuring. You used a perfect term. They're shaving. You know, they added some pounds, and now they're doing some exercise to get rid of it. They're doing what I need to do. So I mean, you know, that's what they're doing, and yeah, they'll be okay. I agree.
Good for them.
PC Mag article: PS4. We just talked about the Xbox. Just in time for National Cat Day, and supposedly that is a real thing.
Let me check it out.
Your PlayStation 4 is about to get an infusion of cuddly kitty videos. That's right. PlayStation Gamers YouTube has finally arrived on the PS4. Better late than never, right? But in addition to letting you pursue the latest viral videos, YouTube on the PS4 also supports the ability to share gameplay directly to YouTube. According to a YouTube software engineer, Richard O'Grady, he said, quote, just hit the share button on the DualShock 4 controller to turn your power move into your next great video on YouTube, end quote. The app lets you watch videos up to 1080p and listen in 5.1 audio surround sound. It sports the latest design for YouTube on TV, which promises to make browsing faster and smoother. You can share and comment on videos right from the app, and if you do, or if you sign in, you'll be able to access your subscribed channels, playlists, and favorites. Meanwhile, you can also find and watch videos uploaded to YouTube by your PlayStation Network friends in the What's New section of the PlayStation 4 and the PlayStation mobile apps, and the new YouTube app for PS4 is available for download from the PlayStation Store. So, Kurt, I'm obviously our listeners know this. I'm not the gaming person. What's your thoughts on this?
Well, better late than never. You know, the Xbox One had a YouTube app like pretty much out of the gate. No, I can't say that. I did just get an Xbox One, so that's why I'm.
You know. Did it allow you to do the screen the record your screen stuff?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I've recorded a couple clips from my games, but I have no idea where it's saving to. And I can go to my profile on xboxlive.com or whatever, you know, live.com, whatever it is, and I can see, you know, clips that I've watched, but I really don't know where they are. And if I want to delete them, I haven't figured that out yet, but I'm sure a quick Google search will resolve that, but I thought it was interesting. But, you know, it seems like the big thing nowadays for gamers is being able to do what are called Let's Plays, and all they do is they, I mean, if it's not bad enough to just play a video game that might be based on real life, what if you watch a video of someone else playing a video game based on real life? And that's where people are making money. There's PewDiePie on YouTube. Has the most, I believe he's the most successful YouTube, YouTuber, whatever. I think it's in the order of a couple million that he takes in, or 2 or 3 million, I think. He's not supposed to release this these numbers, but.
You're talking about in cash from ads?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
And he's. You know, look at the top subscriptions on YouTube, and I think it's him. He's Swedish, I think, something like that. I don't know. I should probably do research before I start talking about him. But
so he plays games, and other people watch him play games.
Mm-hmm. He's really funny to watch. Some people think he's really annoying. I think he's kind of funny. That's what he does. He will play games, and it's getting kind of big where people will send him things. You know, where companies will say, "Hey, test this out" or whatever. Like I think he tested out the Oculus Rift. And that was pretty interesting to watch. I don't know. Some people think he's hilarious. They're just, you know, but this is how people are making money. Some, you know, they don't have to have a job. They just record videos and put them on YouTube.
I mean, we talked about it a while ago. We moved into the digital age. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
It's like, I could imagine explaining to, like, somebody from the past, you know, how do you make money? Well, I do things... And record them and put them out there. So we can't. Can I see? You know. Well, you can see it, but you can't hold it. So what are you doing to help society? Nothing. You know. So, what was the original question? Xbox One. Yeah, they could.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, but PlayStation 4 seems to be the most popular one right now, and sharing is they're both pretty good at sharing on both of these versus, you know, how they're doing things.
Good deal. Am I supposed to fill in for that cough?
No, if you want to. I mean, I'm muting it, but I'm sure you're hearing it on his mic. Let's see.
Your cough doesn't freak me out as much as the spider that's hanging on your mic.
Yeah, though. they've decorated the
studio.
The studio. It looks pretty. It's pretty wicked.
Yeah, we have Halloween decorations all over the WCCR 94.5 studio.
I should take a picture.
We'll put it up online and let you guys see what it looks like. The Keith Simmel and the folks at WCCR did a great job. Hats off to them.
All right. If you have ever developed any apps for a phone, now I'm sure testing has always been fun. If you've ever developed anything, you know, testing is always big important. Apple's Test Flight launches. It's now the internet hordes can test your apps. If you're an iPhone app developer looking to have a horde of testers check out your wares before you launch, then there's some good news. Apple launched its Test Flight beta testing service on Thursday, which may take some of the sting out of the feedback process. As many as 1,000 people can see if your apps are up to snuff. Registered developers just email testers through the iTunes Connect portal, and the recipients follow the included link to download the official app from the App Store. The system also sends testers notifications when it's time to check out new updates. The iPhone maker bought TestFlight earlier this year, and although the service remained in operation, it was filled with complications. Handsets for testing had to be identified and whitelisted, which involved a process that included provisioning or installing specific profiles on select devices and collecting UDID device identification numbers. Even now, though it's simpler, the process isn't entirely easy. To qualify for Apple's new 1,000 tester march, developers must submit their app for a beta app review similar to finished apps undergoing a standard App Store review process. Otherwise, they can keep the testing internal, which doesn't require this review. For details on test flight procedures and policies, visit Apple's test flight page in its developer portal. So, I thought it was kind of interesting that, usually they'll release something new that might have one little bug in it, and then it immediately gets tons and tons and tons of one-star reviews, and, their reputation is shot from the get-go, right out of the gate. So this probably will help a little bit with that sort of thing.
Well, this is great. I mean, there's just no other way to describe this. I mean, this is great for developers because a while ago. I'm not supposed to act like a hick on the radio.
W-A-L-L-A, yeah. Walla.
A while ago. There we go. A few minutes ago, you talked about the Windows 10 preview, and you were saying if you're savvy on a computer and you know how to install Windows, and go out and get the developer preview of Windows 10.
You can get feedback and everything, which I've given feedback on.
Exactly, and that's what developers need. I mean, you can't fix it without knowing what's wrong. And so, I mean, to me, this is great. For instance, we had iOS 8 come out a couple of weeks ago, and we noticed right after iOS came out that iOS 8.01 came out, okay? And then after 8.01 came out, immediately 8.02 had to come out because they had problems. Why did 8.01 and 8.02 come out? Because things happened that the developers didn't expect to happen out in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So the more people who test the product out in the real world, the more of those problems you could take care of.
Right.
So I think this is just excellent, and what you're doing is you're increasing the quality of the applications.
Oh yeah,
and so that's really where it's at. I mean, you need to increase the quality of the applications because for me and you and our listeners, that's what we want. Mm-hmm. We want quality applications, especially if we're going to pay for them.
The only real drawback I can see to this is if there are some kind of security flaws that are inherent in these. But that's only going to burn. What? How many was it? 100 people at a time, which is still bad, but considering,
well, yeah, and what you're hoping, I guess, is that somebody out there
will catch it.
And it sounded to me like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it said here that the article said registered developers email testers through the iTunes Connect portal. So it sounds to me like the developer has control over who tests the app.
Right.
Is that what you got out of that?
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, that's what I got out of the article. And if that's the case, that's really good because, I mean, obviously you're not going to shoot your application out there to somebody who's going to try
anyone,
to hack it or something.
Right.
Yeah. But right. I see what you're saying, too. You wouldn't want your testers to get hacked at the same
right.
time.
Right. Absolutely. Or absolutely not. Excuse me.
Absolutely. Hack them away.
Ah, yeah.
PC Mag article about Win 7. No funeral, retrospectives, accolades, or notes of sadness. Windows 7 era has come to an end, Kurt. As noted by Network World, Microsoft will stop selling Win 7 licenses to PC makers this Friday. So no more PCs with Windows 7, with the exception of existing inventory. Windows 7 Professional will remain on sale as a standalone product for a very limited time. So keep in mind, there's Windows 7 Regular, and then there's Windows 7 Pro, and Windows 7 Pro is typically what we use in the business world. What does this mean for a vast number of Windows users? Well, apparently not much. New machines are equipped with Windows 8, and Windows 10 is just around the corner. I haven't been in a Best Buy, Walmart, Office Depot, wherever in a long time and seen a Windows 7 machine. It's been a year or so. We can now see that Windows 7 was essentially a placeholder designed to, help out the hordes of critics who didn't like Vista, and I was one of those, and I think there were a whole lot of them. Vista was a pain. It really was. You could install you could install Windows 7 on a machine that would creep along with Vista, and then Windows 7 was just like, okay, I'm happy here. And they tried to bring out the biggest problem, in my opinion, with Vista is where they brought out the user access control, the UAC.
It's too high, too heavy-handed.
Yeah, it was too heavy-handed. They tried to do it, you know, and they were trying to do something good.
Right.
But it was just too much, just too much.
Yeah. Now, I never really used Vista, except I use it at a business I worked at for just a couple months. And, I mean, what I had to do there was so, you know, I just worked in this, like, a couple programs. I didn't really get to really try Vista, so, honestly, I don't have a lot of experience with it. But
yeah, I mean, I used it for probably off and on for about a year. And once Windows 7 came out, I mean, there was just no reason to go back to it. So,
gotcha.
In my opinion. So, Kurt, it looks like it wraps up our tech roundup, and I think what we'll do now is move on to our app of the week.
I feel like it's been a while since I've done this.
Yeah, you were on vacation, so. So you're getting back into the swing of things. It's a lot better than me trying to do the whole thing by myself last week, though.
I still need to listen in to
the
recording.
Yeah. App of the week this week is Splash Top. That's SPLASH Top. Splash Top. You can visit that at splashtop.com. So essentially what Splash Top is, and I know Kurt used it in the past a little bit, and Splash Top is a remote desktop application. It allows you to... It's well known for allowing you to view graphics very well over a remote connection. So let's say that you have, you know, the computer two or three rooms across from you there in the house, and you want to view what's on that computer screen, maybe a movie or something that's streaming. Maybe you have something that only streams in Flash, and you can't do that on your iPad or on your iPhone or your Android device or whatever, and you want to... you want to watch that. Well, you can download Splash Top for free, load it onto the computer, and then you can download the Splash Top app on your mobile device, and you can pull up that screen and watch that video from your screen. And it works really well for graphics. Some remote stuff like VNC and remote desktop protocol are really choppy with graphics.
Oh, yeah.
But Splash Top does a really good job with it. Not only that, but you can control the computer remotely as well. So, you know, it works. You can use Splash Top for computers that are, you know, way away from you in another network or in your same house. For instance, at my house, I use Splash Top on a laptop that I have connected to my TV. And I don't want to be, you know, down there in the little cabinet with the laptop all the time trying to move the cursor around. So Splash Top has another app called... I think it's Splash Top
Streamer.
Streamer is the one that allows you to see the screen.
Okay.
Splash Top Touchpad is what it's called, and essentially it's a virtual mouse that shows up on your iPad or your iPhone. I think they have it for Android and probably maybe Windows Phone as well.
iPad, iPhone, iPod, Mac, Windows, Windows 8 RP, WinPhone, and Google Android devices.
Nice. So even people, even the one or two people that have Winmo phones like Kurt, it's not Winmo anymore. Windows Phone.
It's not been Winmo for a long time,
I know,
my friend.
I'm sorry. I say that every time, don't I? I used to have a Winmo phone.
Winmo. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. But...
That's just Windows.
Yeah, now it's just Windows. Windows. Just Windows. Everything's just Windows.
On my
but
phone.
From your Windows phone, you can also use Splash Top. So if you want to control that computer across the room, I've seen people use it for presentations. So you download that, and it acts like a mouse that you can use for your presentation.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And it has a keyboard on it, too. So it comes in handy for several different things, and it's a good product. It's not going to tear up your computer or anything, so... go check it out, Splash Top, splashtop.com, and we don't get anything from Splash Top for the commercial here, but and it's not really a commercial. We're just talking about products that we like. So go check that out, and if you use Splash Top or you like it, feel free to send us a tweet at WCCR Tech Talk or comment there on our Facebook page and let us know how you like it.
I would like to say before we go into our goofy, weird and goofy tech. Oh, wait, that's later. But I'd just like to say right now, before we go into our deep dive, excuse me, that yesterday was National Cat Day.
And, it was. So you looked it up.
I actually looked it up, yeah. And their mascot, instead of mascot, their mascot is Cannon. He's an eight-month-old cat. Oh, okay, that's enough of that. So, I guess we're getting into our deep dive. That was interesting.
Kurt got too excited about cats and couldn't get the music going.
And this is going on here.
First article in our deep dive, Kurt, PC Magazine article about wearables. Microsoft today unveiled its long-rumored health platform, complete with a cloud service, mobile app, and smart band designed, quote, for people who want to live healthier and be more productive, end quote. Joining the ranks of Apple, Google, Samsung, Redmond is now offering $199 Microsoft Band, $199.99 at the Microsoft Store in limited quantities. Yeah. Maybe qualities, too. Hey. And Microsoft stores have it around the country as well. So whether you're tracking personal fitness goals or just skimming social media updates, Redmond's Smart Band keeps you connected to iOS, Android, or Windows phone devices. With 10 smart sensors, the wrist-worn device promises all-day heart rate monitoring, calorie burn measurement, and advanced sleep quality tracking, not to mention guided workouts curated by Gold's Gym, Shape Men's Fitness, and Muscle and Fitness. And so, Kurt, you know, wearables. You know, are wearables the new tech?
I guess so. Me and you don't seem to be the proper audience for this because we don't really, we haven't been so positive about it, but that seems to be the big thing now. You know, a lot of people are spending more time in a sedentary lifestyle, and I guess this helps you keep track of that. You know, we're making everything else digital.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
of course, I'm thinking from a fitness aspect first.
Right, right.
But, I mean, considering other aspects, you know, being able to do any type of pay from a wearable, you know, having just another screen to look at and check things out, you know, that's, yeah, it's all there, I guess. You know, all the pieces are there, you know, to, you know, how many science fiction shows have we had where they say, you know, they look into their watch and say, you know.
Beat me up, Scotty.
Well, you know, that kind of thing is there. You know, even Knight Rider, you know, he's like, Kit, where are you at? And, you know, you had all the kinds of other shows. I think it was even on, what was the one? It's Danger, Will Robinson. What was that one? Yeah, I think they had a watch they talked to in that one. I mean, Power Rangers even had a watch you're talking to. I mean, you know, this is
well,
the
now
thing.
Now you're going way back.
Way back. It was like 94, 95. But.
So, you know, if I could have a watch that would make my truck talk, that would make me happy. But, you know.
What would your truck say?
Probably drive a
shift,
little.
Shift now.
Drive a little slower is probably what my truck would say.
Change my oil.
Yeah. You haven't done that in a long time. So, you know, I guess I kind of have to agree with you. I mean, I guess we're not in the, as far as fitness is concerned, we're not in the right realm for, you know, we sit at our office desk most of the day, and so we're probably not in the right realm for a wearable, but I think that's what they're trying to change. You know, for instance, with the new Apple Health stuff, and I assume this is working with Apple Health, it says it will. So,
wow.
Yeah. That's what it said. It said here in the article, it said,
well, that's Microsoft for
it
you.
It said, Redmond Smart Band keeps you connected to iOS, Android, or Windows phone devices. So, and I found it interesting, the article mentioned iOS first. You would think that since it's a Windows product, but anyway. So, is it important for me as an office sitter, a person who sits in my office, for lack of a better term, to, you know, have something that alerts me and says, hey, you've been sitting down for, you know, 2 hours. Why don't you get up and move around?
That probably would be a good idea, actually, because they say that sitting is killing us.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you've only taken 25 steps today. You know, why don't you get out and walk around the building? You know, so I think those are some advantages to these types of devices is, you know, and it's not just, you know, the wearables, the nice thing about the wearables, I think, is that it gives a little closer connection to you. You know, my phone's at my side or in my pocket. And it really doesn't know what my heart rate is or anything like that. But the wearable, on the other hand, can determine that and, you know, kind of give me a hand when and I'm playing wearable advocate here, but kind of give me a hand when, you know, maybe I need to get up and move around a little bit, or maybe I need to be a little more active for that day.
Well, I mean, I can set a reminder on my phone that's, you know, every 15 minutes, you know, tell me to, you know, walk 10 steps.
You know, you can do that.
I can do that. I don't need some watch thing to tell me.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, I just have to say it.
I'll play the other advocate.
You can play the other advocate. And I've had several people. Now, in my opinion, this watch from Microsoft it's not a watch. This device, this wearable from Microsoft, is pretty ugly. I mean, it's kind of like the Fitbit or whatever else. I mean, I'm not into this, you know, wear the little band on your arm that looks like a rubber band. I've seen people wear rubber bands on their arms and these little bands that say things ever since I was a little kid. And I don't see it. It doesn't make sense to me. So that doesn't look...
To be honest, I kind of like this design a little bit better because it's longer and, like, it's just a different spin. It uses more of this, more of the flat real estate of your wrist. I know that sounds really stupid, but it uses more of the flatter portion to give you more screen instead of spreading out this way.
Right.
But I don't know because, you know, my hand bends like this. If it's taller, it would... My wrist that would hit it or whatever, but I don't know.
I really like the idea of the Pebble. And I really like the idea of the Apple Watch, the iWatch. Apple Watch.
They couldn't get iWatch.
They couldn't get iWatch, that's right.
The Swatch.
Sorry to Swatch for that. The Apple Watch. I really like the look of the Apple Watch. I've actually played around with a Pebble Watch before. And both of those are wearables that are more in the form of a timekeeping device than they are in the form of a Fitbit or a Microsoft, whatever they call this thing.
This webpage is awesome. I don't know. Microsoft Band?
Band. Is that what they're calling it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, disadvantages, Kurt. What's your thoughts? Disadvantages, security risks?
Let's see here. Obviously, it'll sync to a phone. I wonder if there's a way you can get it to sync in. I think, well, this is not so much of just the Microsoft Health, but any of these health services is going to have all of your personal information down to your weight, your height, your BMI, and, you know, that could be hacked. I mean, I don't really care so much if somebody finds out that I'm 5'10". You know, not a big deal.
Right.
But some other people might not like that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is that more private than, say, your bank account information? Yeah, you know, it should be treated just as important as your Social Security? Yeah. I guess. But, you know, this is going to be a whole new realm of security breaches and things.
Well, and this is kind of off topic. It's kind of on topic, but it's kind of off topic. We were talking about exercising with these wearables, and a lot of people take their wearable connected to their phone. They go run on a hike and then run on a trail, and then when they get done, they post it. They posted to Facebook or posted to Twitter, and I've just finished this such and such trail. They do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday between 10 and 11. I know on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday between 10 and 11 where they are.
Oh, that's very true.
I also know where they are not.
Home.
Okay, exactly. So, I mean, as a person who dabbles in the security field, that bothers me. You know, social engineering is quite crazy. And, you know, if they have a family at home, you know, it'd be really easy for someone to dress up like the washer repairman and, you know, and make their way to that house. And that's scary.
I know just today of somebody who did a password reset on their email account, and they did the password reset to their phone. And then they sent him a message that said, "Hey man, I accidentally sent something to your phone. Can you give me that number?" Well, he gave it to him, and then he reset his password right there. And, of course, he's pulling a prank on him, but, you know, I mean, if it was that easy, just, you know, if it's just a friend, I mean, how, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, there's security risks to this type of stuff. And like you said, the wearables, they're going to want to eventually do pay and things like that with it.
Yeah.
And anytime you're transmitting between two devices.
There's a chance.
These devices they do not communicate directly with, you know, a cellular device or something themselves. It's, you know, they communicate with the phone that's closest to them, with the mobile device that's closest to them. So you can run into some security issues there.
I'm digging their webpage. This is kind of cool.
It'd be interesting to see what Microsoft does with it, especially since, Nadella's been talking a lot about how they're not going to do a whole lot of hardware, and we're seeing hardware from them. So, interesting stuff.
Very interesting. Oh, and I will say this about Microsoft hardware. Microsoft's dedicated, I mean, their hardware has pretty good build quality. Obviously, it's not like right up to Apple's standard, but if I would buy something from Microsoft over, you know, Targus and that kind of thing, for sure.
Yeah.
So it can't be bad. It can't be terrible. So
yeah, I mean, they've got good products. They have for a long time, even since their video game controllers and things like that.
Oh yeah.
Well, one more article for our deep dive, another PC Mag article about Facebook Rooms. Okay. Now, Kurt,
haven't read or heard about this yet.
Okay, all right. So
I was lazy and didn't read your article, sorry.
So Facebook Rooms is something new that's come out within the last week. And essentially, Rooms, it looks a lot like a lot like Facebook.
Oh,
in the way that it looks, but it's a lot like a stripped down Facebook wall without any of the social interaction that's possible inside of Facebook. There's a PC Mag article out there that has some pictures that one of their article writers has put out there, and essentially what you can do is you join specific rooms by scanning QR codes or by adding an image of the QR code to your camera roll, which is kind of strange in itself. And then once you do that, you're put into that room, and essentially a room is just a place of a specific topic of conversation. So for instance, if we wanted to create a room about Tech Talk Today, the only thing that would be in there would be posts about Tech Talk Today, and there's no real social interaction. And then you can't search for rooms, which is really strange. Room discovery, you're automatically enrolled into a room that posts posts rooms of interest, but you can't search for things that interest you. So the room that you're in, they'll recommend rooms depending upon the room that you're in. But the only way that you could get into a different room is if somebody sent you one of those QR codes.
Odd.
Yeah, very, very odd. Very odd. You were talking a while ago about, you know, about the wearables kind of being out of our realm. This is way out of my realm. I don't understand it. Just some more notes. Moderators can change key settings like rooms online searchability and even
what? Searchability?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. So I guess you can search for it somewhere online, like a Google search.
Or to be like, I create a room and I can only invite people, or versus
it being available to be able to, yeah, search online.
We have no idea.
But this is really strange. I really wanted to bring this up more than anything for our listeners to essentially see if any of them have used it.
Help us.
Yeah. You know, obviously, this is something new, and it's not something that Kurt and I are real big into.
This is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, I know. And not only this, here. Okay, this I thought this was kind of funny. Anyone can report inappropriate content in rooms, and it's been classified into one of three categories. Category one, inappropriate photo or video of me. Category two, bullying of a minor. Category number three, it doesn't belong in rooms. I mean, that's it's almost like some gooberhead at Facebook said, hey, I come up with this cool new app. And they're like, okay, whatever, just throw it out there.
I think, what does it do? I don't know yet.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. It's called Rooms, you know? It's kind of like Windows, except bigger.
This isn't going to – I personally don't think this is going to catch. I mean, it probably will, and I'll have just no idea, but I mean – I still don't know what it's for. Like they.
Well, I think the biggest thing, the very biggest thing about rooms is anonymity. So the user can use their Facebook ID or they cannot. So if they want to post things out to a room, then they can post it out there with some form of being anonymous, to a slight extent.
Well, have you ever heard of Yik Yak?
No.
Yik Yak is it mainly binds itself to whatever college you're nearest to, but it's basically where people can anonymously post anything limited to such and such characters. It's more than Twitter, but basically it's total anonymity. This is kind of taking away that total anonymity part. Well, I need to stop saying that word. So, there's already something there. I guess this is Facebook just trying to get a slice of that pie.
Yeah, that's what most of these companies are trying to do. They're trying to get a slice of
whatever's big at the moment.
Exactly. That's why you see, like Vine, for instance, when they got big, there were several other companies that tried to do it too.
Instagram turned on videos, I think, after Vine.
Exactly. So just companies trying to do their thing. But if you're a listener out there and you've used Rooms or you're thinking about using Rooms, shoot us a tweet at WCCR Tech Talk or put up something on our Facebook page and let us know what you thought about it. We'd be very interested to see that. And so that actually finishes up our deep dive. And now we're going to turn into Kurt's favorite part of the show and look at our weird and goofy tech. There we go.
Okay. I have to credit Justin for finding this one. This is good. Justin, quick quiz. If you're out in the forest and you happen to see a wild bear, should you A, run away screaming, B, back away slowly and avoid eye contact, or C, snap a quick selfie with your new furry friend?
I'm going to go with C on that
C,
one.
C, if you answered C, you are very wrong. Oh. Answer B is a correct option. Seems pretty obvious, right? Well, not for some people. This is on PC Mag. U.S. Forest Service officials in Lake Tahoe have issued a new warning against taking selfies with wild bears.
They had to issue a warning.
Oh, gosh. Because some park goers are apparently so eager to capture a cool shot for social media that they're putting their lives in danger. Ground zero for the bear selfie epidemic is the popular Taylor Creek Visitor Center in South Lake Tahoe, where loads of smartphone-wielding visitors and hungry bears gather each year in the fall for canoe and salmon spawning. That's not canoe. I'm going to embarrass about this one. For salmon spawning season. Kakani? Why? I'm a little embarrassed. I might just stop. We've had mobs of people that are actually rushing toward the bears trying to get a selfie photo, Lisa Heron, spokesperson for the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, told WFMY News 2. The U.S. Forest Service has issued advisories warning people to keep their distance from the wild animals. Still, the problem is reportedly getting so bad that park officials are threatening to close down the area if people don't stop. Aaron said it's very possible the site will be closed. It is presenting a safety issue. We're afraid someone is going to get attacked, she said. Meanwhile, this isn't the first time technology has posed a threat in nature. The National Park Service recently banned the use of personal drones throughout Yosemite National Park because of their possible interference with the animals there. For more, check out our slideshow above, the Yosemite drone footage. The Park Service doesn't want you to see. This is on PC Mag, of course. Oh, man, that's... Let's just end the show right now.
Why in the world would you... Yeah. It's one thing to take a picture of the bear when you got a long zoom lens on your camera from, hundreds of feet away. It's a different thing. They've got a picture here on the PC Mag site of a guy that's smiling.
Got this goofy grin.
And right behind him, you can see the bear. So, we all know how good the front-facing camera on a phone is. You can see the bear. So, he's within, what, Kurt, 20 yards, 25 yards of that bear?
He could throw a ball, and not even a very good throw, and hit the bear quite easily.
And if you're going to take a selfie with the bear, you might as well just throw a ball at it too, right? It's just ridiculous. Smokey the Bear says don't take selfies with the bears. Instead of don't start forest fires, they're going to have to do commercials where he says don't take pictures with the bears.
How would they fight this? Other than closing the place, how would they fight this? You can't put a cell jammer because they could just take the picture and then upload it later. There's no way you can act. Oh, my goodness. This is, honestly.
Well, how it would stop is the first time somebody got mauled to death. That's.
People. I don't think it stops some people. I think that would encourage others.
Oh, man.
Well, you've seen Reddit and how Reddit works, where you post things for what they call karma. And what you'll have happen there is somebody will say, they'll be using a nail gun and they'll drive a nail through their hand and they'll take a picture of it and say, well, check this out. And why are you posting this to Reddit for karma? Go to the hospital. No. I mean, I guess, honestly, this is a product. This is our generation. We're the narcissistic generation that wants attention at whatever cost. It doesn't matter.
And we'll use our technology to do it. And that's why it's on Tech Talk today.
That's why it's on Tech Talk today. And that's how it goes.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate you listening to our show today. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/WCCR Tech Talk. And don't forget, today we're on WCCR 94.5 LPFM here at University of the Cumberlands. You can also find us on Twitter at WCCR Tech Talk, and today's podcast will be up on iTunes. You can find that by searching Tech Talk Today, and it'll also be up on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that about ends us up for tonight.
That ends us today. We are the last in Thursday's lineup. Tune with us next week. And it will be starting with Andrew Bushbacher at Take a Back Road at 9 o'clock on Thursday, and we'll be on at 6 o'clock. So.
That's right. So next Thursday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, don't forget to catch us on the air. You can also catch us at ucumberlands.edu/WCCR. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Thank you very much.
Good night.